Good morning, 7:42 here on the Mighty 690. As we go throughout a Wednesday edition of the program, it's time for our chat with folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And joining us, we have Wendy Powell and Cherry Nelson. How are you both doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing really good.
Yay, good to have you on here. So we're going to start things off with Wendy. And I know we have several events that are coming up here. So what do we have on the way?
Yeah, so we've got our heyday is what we're calling
Good.
A Kubota, the Romans Outdoor Power. They're sponsoring a heyday coming up on June 23rd. So folks will be able to come out and test drive some of the Kubota haying equipment, but also we're going to be talking about pasture management and the shortage of forage that is plaguing all of us. So we'll have lots of pasture management information. The Conservation District will also be out there with their equipment that they have available for folks to rent out as well. So that'll be a really great equipment day and kind of a pasture management information day, June 23rd. And that's going to be a few miles west of Independence. More details coming soon.
Okay. Well, so hopefully we'll be able to make lots of hay this year. That's the hope. So
yes.
Good deal. Well, that's going to be good.
Yeah.
So, and anything else as far as events go? I know that we've had talk about the Kitchen Kids Camp and that sort of thing. I know that's, you know, we've had a holiday talking about that. So
yes.
That
so really I'm not sure if they're all full yet, but if anybody's interested in getting on a wait list for those, certainly call the office and check in on that.
Yeah, I know several have already filled up, so
yes.
Something that you want to check out if you're interested in that.
Absolutely. So. And then county fair is coming up, so that takes a lot of planning, so we're all busy with that too.
Of course, very good. Well, getting back to a little bit of your wheelhouse with livestock production, mm-hmm. Talking some antibiotics today. So what is this about over-the-counter antibiotics needing veterinary oversight beginning this year?
Yeah, so in 2018, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, rolled out this plan to kind of remove some of the antibiotics that are available to livestock producers and other animals, the pets, everything. So really, the idea is, in humans, we have a lot of problem with antibiotics not doing their job. Right. Which is we know that we hear that all the time. And so the FDA has decided that if we can remove some of these antibiotics from our food supply, then maybe our human population can keep what antibiotics we do have, keep them acting. So the idea was to make that a phased process. So back in 2018, I don't remember what year it was. We had the VFD, the Veterinary Feed Directive, where we took a lot of the additives from feed ingredients. They had to have a veterinary prescription to have that mixed into your feed. And so beginning in June, a lot of the antibiotics that are available over the counter right now, which will be like your LA-200, sulfa drugs, things like that, those are going to be put behind the counter. So you'll just need a veterinarian prescription to access those antibiotics for your livestock, for pets, for anything. That applies to all animal species, regardless of their role in your operation. So it's not something that's terribly surprising, and it's not something to necessarily be it's not a big deal necessarily if you already have a veterinary client-patient relationship with someone that already knows your operation and you work with a vet. So if you don't have a vet that comes out and helps you with your operation, then now is the time to go ahead and get that figured out. Get that VCPR, that's what we call a veterinary client-patient relationship, get that formalized. And that veterinarian will be able to prescribe whatever antibiotics you might need. This is also going to reduce our dependence on antibiotics. So maybe there's some situations within the operation that we can adjust a little bit. Maybe reevaluate the feeding operation or look at the genetics and the health of our herd, the housing of our livestock operations to reduce the need of antibiotics. So, I mean, everything we do in a livestock operation is integrated. All of our breeding decisions are going to affect our profits. All of our vaccination programs, all of that factors into everything else. So kind of honing in on any of those less efficient processes can reduce our dependence on any sort of medication.
Yeah. Is there any other ways that we can, you know, as producers, reduce some of that dependency on these antimicrobials and actually the antibiotics themselves?
Sure. Let's talk about foot lameness, for instance. So foot rot is something that is nearly always a problem. It's a problem in wet years when we're dealing with mud, and it's a problem in dry years when we're dealing with dry skin, and those bacteria can get in through those skin breaks. So if we are monitoring our herds closely, you know, we see something out there that's lame and we get on top of it quickly rather than delaying that treatment, then we're going to have much more success getting things taken care of. And there's lots of different reasons for lameness. So really inspecting the problem instead of just kind of throwing out a treatment and hoping that catches the problem, then that's going to also be a factor.
Well, and that sort of thing probably saves money too, because I imagine, you know, these antibiotics are not certainly free, and some of them are probably fairly expensive.
Absolutely, yes. Anything that we use is going to be expensive. If we want it to be effective, we usually have to shell out the pennies for it.
Yeah, well, it's just like anything. If it's labeled for a certain use, it's always more. Anything labeled for broadcast, that you get double it at least. You know, it just seems like everything, the specialty has to be more expensive.
Yes, absolutely. So what we're looking at, I think it's June 11th, the manufacturers of these antibiotics will be changing the labels on their products at the manufacturing point. So if a store has these products on their shelves currently, they are allowed to go ahead and sell those products as labeled, over the counter labeled, as long as they don't get expired. And when those products are sold out, and then they get the new product in that's labeled as prescription only, then that will be put behind the counter.
So even for those folks listening who may have a feed store, yeah, you're going to have to go ahead and make this change.
Yes.
Coming up here.
Yep. And a lot of times feed stores, if they don't already have a pharmacy license, they might just discontinue carrying that sort of product. But a lot of times you can just work with your vet to access these prescriptions. It's really not a big deal if you work with a vet. So, and I encourage anybody that has livestock to know your vet, have that person that you can call in emergencies, because emergencies happen.
Oh, absolutely. And that doesn't matter the size of your operation either. You know, the small or large is something that you're definitely going to want to have, even for 4-H, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, even if you're just raising a few. So, anything else that we should be aware of as we kind of look towards making this transition?
Well, just be aware of the change. Don't let it take you by surprise. And then I really encourage folks to formalize that veterinary client-patient relationship. I don't think I can stress that enough. And then also just keep an eye on your animals. Don't let things fester. Literally.
Yep.
So just stay on top of things, and it'll also save you dollars down the road.
Very good. All right. Well, Wendy, that's good timing here. And we will, Cherry, we just got a second here. If you want to maybe give us a little bit of a preview of what you want to talk about here in our next segment.
Sure. We had applied for and received a National 4-H Council grant earlier this spring, and on pollinators. And so we've got a bunch of kids in Wildcat District that are working on pollinator habitats and educating the public about pollinators. So we're excited about it.
Okay, well, excellent. We will chat about that here in just a few minutes. So appreciate you sticking around for that. And weather-wise, we're looking at a high today right around 81 for Coffeyville and Independence. Right now, we're sitting at 62 degrees. Good morning, 810 here on the Mighty 690 as we continue our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And we have Wendy Powell with us in addition to Cherry Nelson from Wilson County 4-H. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Hey, good to have you on here on the program. My first time kind of getting to talk to you here on air. So can you tell us a little bit about events that we have coming up here in the area?
Sure. It's summertime, so 4-H is busy and a lot of youth activity. We talked a little bit earlier about the Kitchen Kids Camps that we have coming up. A few of those still have some spots, so if you're interested, just call your local office and see what we've got. Coming up, we also have a Wildcat Challenge Day, and what that's going to be is that's going to be hosted in Fredonia. It's going to be our district-wide favorite food show. We're going to have a family and consumer science judging contest and a photography judging contest that same day. So that's coming up on June 12th, and so we're encouraging kids to sign up for that and check it out.
Well, and photography seems to continue to grow as one of those 4-H categories that a lot of kids like.
Oh, absolutely. The photography project is probably one of our largest projects now, that and the foods project.
Sure.
Because everybody has a camera in their pocket. So our photography leader always likes to say the best camera you have is the one you have with you.
Absolutely. Yep. So. You just kind of develop that eye and see what you might see.
So, absolutely.
Good deal. Well, so let's get into your topic for today, talking about a pollinator grant here. Let's tell us about that.
Yeah, we applied for a National 4-H Council grant, and this grant is sponsored by National 4-H Council and the Corteva Corporation, and it is for pollinator habitats. And part of this grant was we took some kids to Washington, D.C. to the Ignite 4-H conference back in March. They attended some leadership classes and a few classes about pollinators. And then we got to do the fun stuff in D.C. too. We got to do some tours and things like that. But so those kids came back, and then we did a train the trainer event. So we had six kids that went to D.C. We came back. We had a training for other kids in the district. We also partnered with Leavenworth County, so they're working on this too. So we had about 20 kids that we've trained about pollinator habitats, how to plant habitats, how to create, positive places for pollinators. And then these kids in turn are to go out and teach 250 other kids. So we've already reached that goal. We did Earth Day and hit 550 in one day. So, but our goal is to hit as many youth and adults as we possibly can. So, part of the project too is they were to cooperate with a project to put in a habitat. So they've been working with this here in Wildcat District. They're working with the city of Parsons, who's redoing their Tolan Creek Park, and they're going to be helping with the habitat planting there. They're in charge of picking what plants we put in that are good for pollinators. So it's exciting. The kids have been doing some stuff. We did this week. We've had kids went and worked with the Parsons Garden Club, Kids Garden Club, and we did a program for Rotary down here yesterday about it. So we've got a lot of other programs coming up and for those things. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that is really great. And something that I didn't know that I learned from one of the 4-H folks is that the normal, like, honeybee is not native to this area.
No, honeybees are not native to North America. They were brought in by the colonists in the 1600s. Fun fact about honeybees, though, they are one of the most important animals in the world. They do contribute about $9 billion to our economy every year because we need honeybees for pollination of our crops and our foods. A lot of the foods that we eat, we wouldn't have if we didn't have honeybees. Chocolate. We were talking about chocolate out there, and we wouldn't have chocolate without pollinators. So think about that. That's important. It's fun because, you think about the honeybee, and that's what everybody thinks about. Well, in Kansas, there's estimated to be over 400 species of native bees.
Wow.
And native bees are not like honeybees. They don't colonize and don't make big groups. They're more solitary, and most of them live underground. And Actually, native bees are more efficient pollinators than honeybees because they get up earlier in the day and, you know what they say, the early bird gets the worm, but they get busy early and they work longer, so they're more efficient as pollinators.
And of course, not being a knowledgeable expert myself here on bees, I mean, I think of, like, those bumblebees and then what we would call, like, sweat bees or whatever.
Yep, those are all pollinators, and bumblebees are a native bee to Kansas. So, and they're a solitary bee. You won't find those in swarms. You'll find those typically maybe one or two at a time, but you won't usually find a whole bunch. Now, a lot of times you'll see the carpenter bees, and there's a bunch of those. Carpenter bees are interesting about those. They don't sting. They can't sting you. Now, they look like they will,
look pretty
and they'll dive bomb you, but they don't sting.
That is interesting because, I mean, I've dealt with those a lot. And now, do they pollinate?
All bees will pollinate.
Now, we don't like carpenter bees sometimes because of their destruction.
Well, they can be very destructive, but typically carpenter bees, the destruction, there's already a weakness in the wood that they're working on. So, when you see them in a barn or something like that, the wood is probably already has a soft spot or starting to decay a little bit. And so they're just taken advantage of that, and we'll go on. So, and I think probably the most common pollinator that people think about are butterflies, and butterflies are very important for us too. So, for pollination. So, part of this grant, the kids are talking about what is needed for a good habitat. We're looking at more native type plants, because that's what they think. Some species are very specific, need specific plants. The monarch butterfly, for example, needs milkweed in order to lay their eggs. That's what their eggs and their larvae eat on. So they have to have milkweed. So when we talk to people about planting their habitats, we talk about the flowers. That's the obvious thing, but that's for the adults. And sometimes we forget that we need to feed the larvae too. And, we think about caterpillars and we don't want caterpillars in our gardens and all of those things, but the caterpillars are the larvae for our pollinators when they come back. So it's important, and so we talk about planting food sources for all the broad spectrum.
Now, what about any specific crops? Also, garden vegetables we think about as well. And any specific crops for Kansas that come to mind that really do rely on those pollinators?
I think alfalfa is one. You see a lot of bees and things like that in alfalfa fields. Most of our large crops like that self-pollinate, but pollinators also play a role in the corn and things like that. So, but a lot of them do self-pollinate, but our food crops very, very much so. So if you've got a commercial crops for beans and things like that, you're going to see a lot of pollinators.
Well, I think that's very interesting. And now, we did mention honeybees briefly, but do any of the other bees make honey on their own, or is it mostly just the specific honeybees that do
the
that?
The honeybees are the ones that make the honey.
Interesting.
So the others make their own food sources, but it's not honey we think about. No.
Mm-hmm. No, that's just super, super interesting.
Yeah.
So, and then this is one more funny thing that came up at K-State. We always have to have, because I went to K-State.
Uh-huh.
I didn't mention that, but we always have to have the school rivalries. And when I was there, we had a school rivalry because we had we called them trash bees that would hang around the recycling containers.
Oh, absolutely.
And they wouldn't sting you, which is weird. Because you could pour like lemonade and they would crawl all over you, but they wouldn't sting you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they had stingers. But we were saying the K-State trash bees were better than the KU trash bees because apparently the KU trash bees have been known to sting people.
Oh.
But the K-State trash bees didn't, so they were better.
Well, the funny thing about bees is typically if you leave them alone and don't really bother them, just doing something like that, they will crawl on you and won't sting you. But now if you get in their hive and really start messing or you start swatting at them and things like that, that's when they get aggressive. And typically bees are not aggressive like that.
Sure, so. Yeah. I mean, the only time like we talk about is when they're trying to sting it because they're threatened or whatever. I mean,
exactly.
My dog stepped on one, so, that'll do it.
That's a threat to that bee. So, the dog's a little bit bigger, so. But one thing, be looking, the week of June 18th to the 24th is National Pollinator Week.
Okay.
So we're hopefully going to be doing some things for National Pollinator Week. So.
Well, this is great, and I appreciate you bringing all this to our attention. And of course, if kids are out there maybe interested in getting into 4-H, maybe they want to learn more about, you know, pollinators or many of the other topics. I mean, while you're here on the radio, what's a way to do that?
Yeah, kids, if anybody's interested in joining 4-H, they can contact any of our Wildcat Extension offices, and we'd be glad to talk to you about how you do that and how you go about finding a club and anything that you might be interested. The beauty of 4-H is there's something for everybody.
There really is.
I mean, you know, people a lot of times just think it's animals, but, you know, there's so much more. We talked about photography earlier, mm-hmm. and everybody has a camera in their pocket nowadays.
Yeah, woodworking. I mean, there's electronics projects, fashion, rocketry. The list goes on and on.
Absolutely. And on. There's a ton of things kids can get involved yep. in and learn about.
I really enjoyed my time just doing the poultry. So yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah.
So, anything else you'd like to share, Cherry, as we finish up?
If anybody out there, you know, has a group that they would like for those kids to come and talk to, please reach out and let us know. We'd be happy to set something up, and this grant runs through the fall, so we'll be we'll get into some classrooms this fall. We've talked to several teachers already that we'll probably be getting into some of the schools. So,
well, that's really great to be able to provide some little bit of this hands-on and you know, just share that information, because it's really good to know. That's one of those things, pollinators, that maybe go unnoticed. We just think, it's just an annoying insect.
It's, but yeah,
it's
exactly.
doing some good work.
But they're very important to all of us. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Wendy, you want to just run through the upcoming events real quick we mentioned earlier in the program?
Sure. June 23rd is going to be our hay day. So anybody interested in test driving any of the equipment from Roman's Outdoor Power, also checking out the equipment available from Montgomery County Conservation Service, and then pasture management information, June 23rd, and that'll be west of Independence. See our website or social media pages for more information. Or call me at the Labette County office, 620-784-5337.
Okay, and Cherry, if people want to get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can get a hold of me at the Wilson County office in Fredonia, 620-378-2167.
Okay, well, very good, ladies. Glad to have you on the program here. And I look forward to talking again here real soon.
Thanks for having us.
All right, and we'll get started with Open Line here coming up. We have an early bird edition of that, and then we have Candy Westbrook in studio at 9:10 here on the Mighty 690, 65 degrees, heading up to a high of 81.